Hey everyone, welcome to Locked On Lakers for Thursday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky. Andy, the Lakers were reportedly set to deliver an update on Anthony Davis on Monday. It's now Thursday. Still no update. Huh. What's next?
You are Locked On Lakers. Your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks to everybody for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day, Monday through Friday, no matter how or where you get your podcasts. It's always free. It's never behind a paywall. And Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you can go to see the show, to participate. Somebody made a really interesting comment that perhaps we'll talk to maybe today or tomorrow, wondering whether or not this team is as bad a supporting cast as LeBron has had since he dragged that horrible Cleveland team to the finals. So I thought that was an interesting comment.
Was this person familiar with LeBron's season last year?
I'm just saying, there were some people leave and say interesting things
on
the YouTube page all the time. And so go there, participate in the chat, and ask us questions, leave us stuff. We like to communicate with all of you as much as possible. Interesting news in the NBA regarding the Phoenix Suns and the sale of the Phoenix Suns, which is adds a lot of context, shall I say, to Jeannie Buss and the Lakers ownership that we're going to talk about over the course of the show. The Lakers,
the newly engaged Jeannie Buss,
yes, to Jay Moore, who I just have never thought is funny. The Lakers lose.
The joke's on you, pal. He's marrying into the Lakers.
That's right. 134 to 120. Lord knows I tried. 134 to 120. The final score Wednesday night in Sacramento. The Lakers lose to the Kings. They fall to 13 and 18, playing very shorthanded. So we'll get to that as well. Talk about that game, a couple things that pop up as interesting. But there's always a danger, Andy, in starting a show with something like this, because the hope is the Lakers, you know, early Thursday morning, you know, have a press release that puts out information about Anthony Davis, gives us all kinds of clarity. But there's an expression that no news is good news. I don't think it applies here. I feel like no news is making me extremely nervous regarding the state of Anthony Davis's foot.
Anthony Davis hurt his foot almost a week ago. He got injured last Friday. We are a day away from the week anniversary of this injury. And it's one thing for the Lakers. what do you
happy,
get a guy?
Happy one-week anniversary to all who celebrate.
I mean, what do you get for AD? Like, right. I forgot what's the one-week anniversary gift. I guess Ace bandages in this case. But, like, it's one thing for the Lakers to have not given a definitive timeline on when they think he'll be out. And the Lakers, really, the last few years have been pretty, for lack of a better way of putting it, cagey about this stuff. And
they learned their lesson with Lonzo Ball. Ball was the last time they started putting hard timelines. It'll be 6 weeks and Lonzo's back. And that he blew that up every time.
Yeah. And he's currently doing that for the Bulls as well. I mean, the stuff that's going on, and it really sucks. You know, we both liked Lonzo as a person and as a player, and you never wish an injury on anybody. But like this situation with Lonzo's knee in Chicago makes the injuries that he dealt with the Lakers look like just overnight healing. I mean, they really have no idea what's going on with that thing at all. But like, it would be one thing if we hadn't had a definitive timeline by now, or if they were just giving the, we'll be reevaluated in 4 weeks, which is
right. Indefinitely out. Indefinitely.
We still don't even know what he did to his foot. Like, we don't even know the diagnosis other than right foot
murder.
Soreness. That is at best odd, at worst totally disconcerting.
It's just, it's really uncomfortable. It's very, very, what it says to me, with a different player, you might say, oh, they just haven't gotten around. With AD,
and
the fact that it was,
haven't gotten around to it. They let us know what was going on with Juan Toscano-Anderson. It's the
holiday,
Andy.
It's the holiday. People have long lists of things to do during the holidays. It's Hanukkah and Christmas at the same time. I mean, it's a lot. There's a lot going on. I'm just saying people are busy.
Brian, Jordan Farmar is no longer on this team.
Okay, now, I mean, not a ton of Jews on the roster, I guess. Well,
or just folks who celebrate both. Like, there's just not a lot. You and I both, our families are mixed. We celebrate both. Even we would have time to give an update on Anthony Davis's foot. We're both pretty busy with these holidays.
Is Dolph Shays still with the organization? Anyway, but, you know, with AD especially, though, because it looked like it wasn't like a heavy, like a traumatic looking moment where you could be like, oh, that was terrible.
No, during the game, the announcers had a hard time figuring out when it happened.
Right. They had to go back and, right. And so that tells me that this might be one of those weird injuries. And when that happens, when you get a delay like this, what I'm concerned about is that they've gotten an opinion. Somebody made a diagnosis. Again, Shams reported on this early in the week. I think Woj confirmed something, put something out. It might have been McMenamin.
McMenamin's been all over it.
Yeah, like people have been saying, like it's going to be at least a month or whatever. And so I'm not like expecting the Lakers to suddenly have him come out and he's like miraculously healed by Friday. But what I get concerned about here is that you have a situation where the doctor gave an opinion. It wasn't good. And so they want to try to find a second or a third because the initial diagnosis is not good. And so that's my concern. I hope I'm wrong. And this could all be dispelled by noon on Thursday.
But yeah, it just feels ominous when it's somebody like Anthony Davis that is always going through something. And again, in the moment, it didn't seem like that big of a thing. And sometimes the injuries that don't seem like that big of a thing in the moment end up the biggest thing afterwards.
Yeah. It's always the ones you least suspect. And it's a problem because, I mean, beyond what Anthony Davis does offensively, and Lord knows he has been just, you know, really throttling teams over the last month or so. This team really struggles without him on the other end. They gave up 134 points on Wednesday to the Kings. On Monday, it was 130 points to the Suns. They gave him, it was 117 to the Wizards. And so, you know, since that win against Denver, where they did a really good job against the Nuggets that night, 108 points, it's been steadily downhill. And, you know, what we saw on Wednesday was, you know, the Lakers just didn't have the firepower to catch up to a good offense because they could not get stops. And it was pretty clear, especially I think to the Kings, that they couldn't get stops. But there were a couple things out of this game, Andy, that are worth talking about, most notably Max Christie and Thomas Bryant. So we'll get to that. And the new changing landscape of ownership in the NBA and how it impacts the Lakers. All that coming up next.
All right, so you're hanging out with some friends and putting back a few drinks, and a few become a few too many, and then the evening comes to an end, people start to head out. You think of calling for a ride, but then you're like, you know what? Nah, I live nearby. I can make it home okay. It's not a big deal. And what are the odds I'm going to get pulled over anyway? And even if I did, what's the worst that could happen? My insurance goes up, lose my license, lose my job, total my car, I injure someone, I injure myself, I kill someone. I mean, you can see where this is going, and everybody knows about the risks of driving drunk. The results are tragic, often deadly, and that still, though, does not stop people from getting behind the wheel while under the influence. And that's why police officers are out there right now, particularly during the holiday season, looking for impaired drivers on our roads, and it's to save lives. So if you think you're okay to drive after a few drinks, think again, play it safe, plan ahead, get a ride. It only takes one mistake to change your life or someone else's forever. Drive sober or get pulled over.
Okay, so Andy, the final score, 134 to 120 in Sacramento on Wednesday night. The Lakers lose. They're now 13 and 18. And stop us if you've heard this before. Friday against at home against a slumping Charlotte team in the midst of a very difficult stretch run of 2022 here. About as close to a must win as you're going to get before Christmas in an NBA season. Lakers cannot afford to give away games against bad opponents, especially when they're about to go out on the road. I had said this, and you know, maybe you, I'm not sure if you still agree with the changing context of AD. When they started the month, if they could finish it exactly where they were, this, I think it was three or four games under 500 at the time. If they can finish December, three or four games under 500, you know, come back for the first homestand of January, that would be a major victory. Do you think that still applies, or do they actually have to make a little bit more progress with AD out?
I mean, practically speaking, you always need to make more progress if you're below 500, but you know, thankfully the West has been exceptionally cooperative with them throughout this entire time. They've been below 500. You would think that they would be much further away from this than they actually have been. Like tonight, losing against the Kings was a bit of an issue along these lines, just because that's one of the teams that they're chasing. But yes, they're still only four and a half games behind the Kings for a six seed. Like, forget the play-in. I'm just talking six seed. You make the playoffs outright. They're only 2.5 games out of the play-in, 3.5 out of, you know, home court advantage, whatever you call it, for the play-in setup. Like, it's not lost yet. It's been an unusual year for that. But it's hard to say the stuff that they have to do without their best player, who affects them more than anybody, even LeBron, when you take into account both ends of the court. But yeah, they've got to try to find ways to win these games, however improbable it is, even if it hasn't become as urgent as you might have assumed it would be 31 games into the season.
Right. Yeah, I mean, look, 51 games is not a ton of time. It's less time than maybe some people might think. But when you're only talking about three games, four games, something like that, that is definitely doable. It's a lot of teams to jump over, but they play these teams a lot too, so there'll be some opportunities. You know, Wednesday
and none of these other teams really quickly have gotten their proverbial bleep together either.
No. We talked about this with Matt George on Wednesday show, kind of previewing Wednesday night's game. I happen to think it's because there are a lot of good teams in the West that there is this sort of parity, which makes it harder for the Lakers. If all these teams were kind of crappy, it would be easier for them to catch up. But, you know, the Kings, I think, are good. And you know, I think, you know, New Orleans is good. I think Utah is still going to be competitive. And Portland is competitive. And, like, there are just a bunch of good to really good teams out there. But the fact that they can't separate from each other in this case is very helpful to the Lakers. And, like, Wednesday night, you go in, obviously, without AD, but also no Russell Westbrook. And Austin Reeves is not playing. And Juan Toscano-Anderson is not playing. And you know, so they didn't have enough dudes. And, you know, I think what did stick out to me, two guys that are really worth talking about. You know, Schroeder continued playing well, and there's some other stuff. And, you know, Lonnie Walker put up his 19 and all that. But in terms of things that I think could impact the trajectory of where they're going that might be new, start with Max Christie. I'm getting strong Austin Reeves vibes. Christie only had, you know, had 6 points, four rebounds, three assists, but overall has started to play a lot and played well. And I'm starting to get that feeling like it was with Reeves last year, where Christie's going to keep playing even when players are back, because he just has a positive impact on things.
Well, he has a positive impact on things, and the way this roster is currently constructed, you know, things might change after a theoretical trade. But for the time being, they don't have a lot of guys just size-wise who offer what Christie has beyond the defensive instincts, beyond the instincts on the glass. We are always loath to promote any other podcast that you should be listening to, because you should just listen to us on repeat all the time. But yes, our buddies over at Lakers Film Room, in this particular case, it was Pete Zayas and Mike Trudell, did a really good breakdown of what's working with Max Christie that I would recommend y'all listen to, because they get into a lot of really good details. Mike Trudell, who's a sideline reporter for the Lakers, travels with the team. He's had a lot of conversations with Christie, has talked with him about, you know, just sort of the process from summer league, where he looked like a guy sped up and over his head and worrying a lot of Laker fans, to a guy right now that, like you said, Brian, seems like you need him in the rotation. And I'm happy to see it. I've been calling him for him to play for a few weeks. So I'm really glad that he's in there, and he looks like yet another instance of this scouting department knowing what's up and knowing how to identify guys mm-hmm. who can be very, very useful.
It's a good example, too, of how you're playing in your role, especially when you're 19, a second-round pick, is really important. And in summer league, a guy like Christie is expected to kind of lead the offense. He's expected to be the focal point. Now, on the NBA team, he's expected to play as aggressive defensively as he possibly can, and hit catch and shoot threes. And tonight, Wednesday night, he did, you know, hit both of them for the Lakers. And, you know, especially, and we'll get into this, as certain guys seem to be falling off, the ascension of a player like Christie, I think, becomes more important, and something that becomes more permanent as the season goes on. Again, strong Austin Reeves vibes, where, like last year, it just came to a point where, like, he needed to play, not because it was a cute story or guys were hurt, just because he was playing better than most of the guys on the roster. Thomas Bryant is also continuing to give the Lakers exactly what they need and exactly what could be expected of him in Anthony Davis's absence. He's not the same guy on either end, particularly on defense, but at least offensively, he is giving the Lakers a credible, giving them credible minutes. He's hitting his threes. I'd be hard pressed to expect more from Bryant than what he's been giving him.
Yeah, 17 points in this game on 6-9 shooting, 2-2 from behind the arc, 3-4 at the line, 10 rebounds, 2 on the offensive glass, 4 assists. He's actually, the last few games, I think, done a really good job passing. Like, and talked about this before, I think he's a really smart player. I think Thomas Bryant makes a lot of really good decisions when he's out there, and, you know, he gets the most out of his talent. You know, I mean, like, there are limitations to him. You know, defensively, he's neither as, I mean, nobody's really as agile as AD at that position, but he's not like a particularly mobile big. You know, he's not floor bound, but he's not slow, but he's not fast that way either. And he's not somebody that, I guess, like Damian Jones, at his absolute best, serves as a rim protecting threat. But there's a lot he does, I think, well. And if nothing else, you know, he got off to that slow start. He had the injury, and then clearly he didn't have his legs. He's come into his own, and you obviously want AD back, but the hope is, assuming the season is still salvageable when AD is eventually back, Thomas Bryant now, I think, will have the reps where he can get his minutes reduced down to, say, like 15 to 18 a night, but they become really good.
Really good, yeah. 18 minutes. I 100% agree. 100% agree. What was clear on a night, again, missing so many players, and Darvin had, as Christie and Bryant show they're playing well, I think Schroeder is starting to really get comfortable, he's in a position where he almost has to carry the offense, particularly when LeBron isn't there, in ways that aren't really fair, and Westbrook's not playing and all that. But, you know, has given the Lakers, I think, what you would hope for with that signing. But the ascension of those guys has come as, you know, Kendrick Nunn has gone back to being almost unplayable. Even on a night where the Lakers were down three guards, I think he only played like 8.5 minutes against Sacramento. And Troy Brown Jr. has kind of fallen
off the cliff
a little bit.
He is either being asked to do too much or has decided there's too much for him to do. But either way, he's playing out of character, I think.
Mm-hmm.
He played 11 minutes, Kendrick Nunn, by the way, but maybe only eight that really were
resonated with me. Right. The other two and a half I could have done without.
He was 0 of 6, by the way, from the floor. Put up a lot of zeros in that column.
It's a donut shop.
Lots of zeros. And so Pat Bev, we talked about this before.
These are the
We know he got 13 points, but knock off the too small thing, Pat Bev. You can't keep doing this.
I am wildly over the Pat Bev experience at this point.
You can't keep doing this while you're down in games. It's a bad look. Like, we talked about this before, Brian. At this point, Patrick Beverley is a parody of himself. And like, any notion that he's doing this because this is what keeps him in the zone, this is what keeps his edge up. This is Patrick Beverley might as well be saying, "You're too small to listen to my podcast," which is available on iTunes and anywhere else you find podcasts.
I think there is still, I do think this is just sort of like when your skills start to, when you've done this, you this way throughout, it used to be you had the attitude and the edge combined with a certain set of skills. The skills are clearly eroding, particularly the outside shot. And it, he's clever. He can get into the lane. He can do a couple things there. Hit a little hook shot over Herter. This is where he did the too small thing again. That looked like a shot that I throw up against like people that are way better at basketball than I am. It just happened to go in. But like when your skills start to deteriorate, what you're left with is leaning into the other stuff. And I think that's really what he's doing because that's sort of all that's there right now. I was thinking about the best thing that could happen, I think, for everybody would be for the Lakers to figure out a way to trade him back to Minnesota because the Timberwolves need him back. And so, like, if the Lakers can't figure out some sort of big grand trade to include Beverley in, do it like soccer. Put it, like, loan him to Minnesota because the Lakers that stuff is just not working. Yeah. And Minnesota needs him. Like they lost something when Beverley got traded. So
I don't even bring this up because Beverley was god awful in this game or anything like that. But I'm just saying
he's fine.
It's all right. But like it's just you look ridiculous
to finish. But anyway, yeah, I'm over the Pat Bev thing. Let's talk ownership because interesting happenings in the NBA. The Phoenix Suns are being sold for $4 billion. Not necessarily the end that Robert Sarver deserves, but still good to have him out of the league. But this does say something contextually about the Lakers and Lakers ownership, so we'll talk about that next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by BetterHelp. Unfortunately, life does not come with a user manual, so when it's not working for you, it's normal to feel stuck. Navigating life's challenges, whether professional or emotional, can bring on anxiety and uncertainty, whether you're talking about a career change, a new relationship, becoming a parent. And I can personally speak to how much therapy has helped me during a really difficult period in my life for me and my family. Sitting down, talking with a professional was huge. And BetterHelp has connected over 3 million people with licensed therapists. It's convenient, accessible anywhere, 100% online, no waiting room, no traffic, and plus it's affordable. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to match yourself up with a therapist. If things aren't clicking, you can easily switch to a new therapist anytime. And learn more, save 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/lockedonNBA. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/lockedonNBA.
So news broke, Andy, on Wednesday that Jeannie Buss and her longtime boyfriend, comedian Jay Moore, are engaged. Mm-hmm. So congratulations to the lovely couple. And the initial reaction, certainly that I had, other than Jay Moore is just not funny. So I hope he's funnier in person, is that the reaction that a lot of people on Twitter had, Lakers fans on Twitter had, that like things like if Jeannie has a wedding to pay for, does that mean the Lakers won't go into the luxury tax? Like, all, well, there, I mean, there were a lot of jokes.
They couldn't afford Alex Caruso. You know, you wonder about the dent from an open bar.
Right. I mean, like, are we choosing between top shelf liquor or Lonnie Walker next year? Like, what are we doing? Is like Jay Moore going to get like a tight five at halftime so you don't have to pay Red Panda? Like, what's going to come of this?
There's also the question too about, you know, given the way Jeannie tends to hire in a couple years, like, is Woj going to drop a bomb that co-president of basketball operations Pelinka and Moore can't decide about whether or not to extend Anthony Davis?
Was like, the host briefly of the official like Lakers podcast?
No, look, I will say this about Jay Moore. I don't know when exactly his time at the game coincided with his time dating Jeannie Buss specifically, but he has been a fixture at games for a long time. So if nothing else, he's quite familiar with the players. Like, he watches as much NBA basketball as Rob Pelinka, or he certainly watches as many opponents of the Lakers as Rob Pelinka.
He had better not be watching as much NBA basketball as Rob Pelinka.
Well,
you're trying to say, but no, if he is watching as much NBA basketball as Rob Pelinka, they have really serious problems, because I suspect Jay Moore is probably watching as much basketball as like you and I do, which he watches every Laker game, catches the other TNT game, maybe if something's on ESPN, follows it online, catches highlights. Rob Pelinka better be watching more than that. If he's not, he's not doing his job.
There are a lot of people who suspect that Pelinka mostly is familiar with Laker opponents. It's going to be really
every time they light up the team, he trades for one.
Let me tell you something. The Rambai are going to be so pissed off when Jay Moore leapfrogs them on the totem pole. Like, they're going to be so mad. They've put in so much time, like, protecting their space in this organization. All of a sudden, Jay Moore is going to come in and start making trades.
All right. So, I mean, obviously the Jeannie wedding budget jokes are low-hanging, they are cheap and obvious, and therefore we are going to make them. That's our lane. You know, locked on that is sort of us. Yeah, so the reason there actually is a sort of point here beyond the jokes. The Suns, it was announced this week, will be purchased by a fellow named Matt Ishbia. His brother Justin will serve as the alternate governor. So I guess the Ishbia brothers are your primary owners.
The Ishbai.
He is a billionaire mortgage lender. They are founding partners of something called Shore Capital, or maybe that's just Justin. I don't know. They have to pass a background check, which I hope the NBA does a little better job at than they have.
I mean, compared to Robert Sarver, how do you fail?
Yeah, I mean, better than the old guy, low bar to clear. They're paying $4 billion for the Phoenix Suns and the Mercury as well in the WNBA. That is a lot of money. And it says something, because if the Suns are worth four bills, the Lakers probably double that. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, yeah.
At least. If the Lakers wanted to say it's at least $8 billion. If the Suns are four, the Denver Broncos
just went for a little under $5 billion. And, you know, I know the NFL is king, but the Lakers are worth more than the Denver Broncos.
Yeah, I mean, the Broncos were once a punchline on The Simpsons, Andy.
Yeah.
And so it says, first of all, it says the Lakers are a wildly valuable franchise, but it's also worth noting that these are people that can drop $4 billion on a team. And maybe not all, you know, I don't know exactly what the share is and how much they're paying and how they finance it, all that, whatever, blah, 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 blah. It's another example of people who come into the league far wealthier than the Buss family. They are a class of ownership that is very different than what the Buss family is. And this is who owns teams now. You know, VC guys are running all over the league.
I was going to say the Buss family is very much the exception, not the rule, to modern team ownership.
Are they the last in the end? I guess it's the Pacers.
Maybe. I mean,
I'm trying to think of any other.
And you know, Herb Simon's almost 90 years old. Like, I don't know exactly what else he's involved with or anything like that. I just know he's owned the team forever.
Right. I mean, there's still family ownership in the league, right. But it's a different kind of, it's people who have made their money somewhere else and then have come and just, you know, hey, I've got $4 billion.
Or like the Benson family, you know, that owns the Pelicans, but also owns the Saints and, you know, clearly has a ton of money coming in from different places. If you can own two professional sports franchises.
Yeah. By the kudos to the Ishbia brothers for beating our bid. Because we, you know, the answer is always no if you don't ask. I, the Lakers, if it were a different franchise, you'd wonder how long they can hang on the Buss family. But the franchise itself is so valuable and the brand is so valuable, they could do this indefinitely. But you do wonder at some point, you know, these jokes about the wedding are jokes, but people are legitimately starting to worry that the Lakers, not necessarily on the roster, but on the infrastructure, are they always going to have the best of everything?
I mean, we mentioned Alex Caruso was a self-inflicted decision. There's no reason they couldn't have kept him, and there was no basketball reason that they shouldn't have.
No, but you've made the point multiple times that they are in fact spending on the roster. They pay a ton in the luxury tax. It's not that they are
right, but
the Bulls, for example, are cheaper.
Right, but they refuse to spend on anything other than stars in terms of, you know, they'll do it.
That's true.
What I'm talking about. Like,
well, I've been very critical of how they spend their money.
Right. I'm not
over the
saying
last
they
couple years.
I don't think it's fair to say that the Lakers don't spend at all or will never go into the luxury tax because it's inaccurate. What I do think is fair to say is they are not willing to spend in ways that I think are often smart, but doesn't seem either splashy or important enough to them to put out those extra millions.
Because, and what they definitely don't do is spend, again, on infrastructure and other things and broadly in ways that you would think, just based on the brand, that they would. That the way that the Dodgers spend, the way that the Warriors spend, the way that the Yankees spend. Like, you would think the Lakers, within the confines of the NBA structures and all that, and blah, 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 would do that. And they don't. And so these questions, and we can wrap it here, and it's going to become important as we talk about the trade deadline and all these other things and what they do going forward. Like, all these questions about the ownership they're going to get louder if this season goes in the direction it is currently going. And so congratulations to Jeannie and Jay. Lakers fans are going to be reacting in a very different way than finding out where they're registered. So Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you go to see the show.
The Laugh Factory.
We will
Comedy Store.
You could save on the reception space if he does, like, you wrap in open mic night with the reception.
You just
purchase. Two-drink minimum. Two-drink minimum.
You purchase a bunch of two-drink minimums. I mean, look, Jeannie has basically everything she could possibly want. You might as well just buy concert tickets for Jay Moore, because really
she owns a tequila company, for God's sakes.
What could Jeannie possibly not have anyway? So
it would actually be galling for them to even have a registry. She's 61. I think he's 52. Like, you don't get to register at this point.
Anyway.
Yeah. I don't want to go to crateandbarrel.com and see that they've got some linens there. That's not okay.
No, it really isn't.
Go bleep yourself, both of you.
No.
And I don't think they will.
The goodie bags at that wedding better be incredible. Stuff you take home as a guest. But, okay, we got to go.
All right. Yeah. And we'll see you. Hopefully, there'll be some Anthony Davis updates. Better win Friday, all that stuff. See you next time.